All right, excellent. So, just a reminder to everyone to mute yourself unless you are one of the speakers today. So, right, thanks so much for joining us, everyone. And good afternoon and welcome to the April Thought Leader interview. And I want to give a big thank you to Serban Kantakouzine and Atanios Kontopoulos. I think I did it. Who will be
Great.
speaking? Awesome. Who will be speaking with us this hour? Serban is Vice President R&D Americas at Air Liquide, and Thanos is Computational and Data Science Scientific Director R&D and International Fellow at Air Liquide. So this interview is an element of IRI's Digital Transformation Community. The DXC is a community of organizations that are on the journey toward digital transformation. Through the DXC, you can access case studies with fresh, relevant content. The latest one on Brunswick is available on our website. A virtual conference dedicated to digital transformation, that's Digital Futures, and it will be taking place October 11th through the 14th this year, virtually. We also have facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. We have April's session coming up tomorrow, and if you'd like an invitation to that, just pop me an email. And we do webinar interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. These will always take place on the third Thursday of the month, but we'll be taking May off due to IRI's annual conference, and we'll be back in June, and I'll have more details on our thought leaders for that shortly. I'll be sure to sign all of you up to receive updates on the DXC, and if you do not wish to receive updates, just let me know. Just a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation. So first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there will not be any visuals here today, just the video so that we can have the conversation going. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can either type your question into the chat and I'll read it out for you, or you can raise your hand and I'll call on you and you can unmute yourself. All right, let's go ahead and get started. Again, thank you so much, Serban and Thanos, for joining me today. I really appreciate it. So can you guys tell me a bit about your roles in the organization and where you sit there?
Yes, Lee. So thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to talk about what our company has been doing on its digital transformation. So my name is Serban Kantakouzine. I'm VP of R&D for the Americas. I've been with the Air Liquide Group for the past 25 years. I have started in R&D as a heat treatment and metallurgical researcher, and then I moved to marketing, ops control business, and I've run several operations in Canada, in North America, in North Africa, and in Japan. And for the last 2.5 years, I've been in charge of our innovation campus in Delaware, in the US, who covers the North and South America area.
Awesome. Thank you. That's great. So all over the world.
All over the world.
All right, Thanos, can you share the same?
Yes, thank you. And thanks for inviting us. So I'm Thanos Kontopoulos. Today, I hold the role of Computational Data Science Scientific Director and Global Lab Director. This means I'm functionally leading a group of more or less 50 data scientists around the globe. One team is within the Delaware campus where that is managed by Serban here. So I started also my career some 26 years ago in Air Liquide. I started in R&D too as an engineer, making a lot of computations on my side, a lot of simulations. So I have a kind of math background. Then I moved to operations for many years, 13 years in a row, but I was more on the technical side. And also, let's say on the production side, the manufacturing side, for some years, making a lot of modeling, real-time optimization tools, process controls, and then I moved back to R&D 10 years ago, in different roles, but mainly to give a boost to the digital part of R&D, and we started creating teams that had data scientists and pushed out the first big data at that time roadmap for Air Liquide. So I'm heading this lab now. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you. So varied, but both R&D. So right up our alley. So let's start off. So Serban, can you share a little bit of background on how digital transformation has evolved at Air Liquide?
Yes, with pleasure, Lee. First of all, as you've understood from my introduction, I'm not an expert in IT and in data science. That's why I brought Thanos to the conversation. But I can give you also some business perspective because I've been a user. I deployed some ERPs and I've been quite involved with this digital transformation, mostly from the business side. So first, a few comments regarding our group. So Air Liquide is a 120 years old chemical company. And we are a leader in the market of industrial gases. Our main products being oxygen, nitrogen, argon, helium, hydrogen, CO2, electronic specialty gases, medical gases, and every associated equipment with gases. And our group operates in 80 countries on all continents, and I've been on a few of them myself. And as a business model, we design, build, own, and operate gas plants in every single country where we operate. And that is because industrial gases cannot be economically transported over large distances. So most of our operations are in relative close proximity to our customers. So our group we are really asset heavy. We have a very large number of assets. Something like over 500 very large plants, hundreds, if not thousands of smaller on-sites, hundreds of field plants. We have something like 300 field plants in the US alone. Over 24 million cylinders, 60,000 bulk tanks, 11,000 trucks and trailers. And we serve 2 million industrial customers and 1.5 million healthcare patients. So you can imagine with all these assets and customers that they're all generating a very large number of data, be it in plant operation, in logistics, in asset tracking, or in customer and patient transaction. At the same time, our business model is also heavily relying on data, because we need to constantly monitor flows, pressures, purity, and asset location to be able to bill our customers at the end of the month. So therefore, there's no surprise if the group has been looking at leveraging digital technologies quite early on. And when I joined the group 25 years ago, already many investments and developments were being done. Specifically in plant and tank telemonitoring and cylinder asset tracking. Only at that time it was called industrial IT and not yet digital. Now the terminology has changed. So to give a few ideas of the different steps between 1995 and 2005, so this first decade, the group has gradually developed its digital infrastructure by selecting the IT solutions and creating IT zones in each continent, by converging and standardizing our ERP and CRM solutions by zone. And then the next decade between 2005 and 2015, the group standardized its industrial management system, digitized some of the HR processes and created the iLab think tank. Then in 2015, the group acquired Airgas in the US. It was a very large acquisition. And at that time, Airgas was one of the most advanced industrial gas companies in digital, with an already set up digital-based omnichannel sales strategy. And lastly, for the last 5 years, during our NEOS plan, digital transformation became one of the three strategic pillars of the group's growth. with the creation of a dedicated digital organization, with the creation of the R&D Data and Decision Science Lab, of the digital fabs, with a move to a more collaborative Google-based cloud work solutions, and with a staffing of R&D computer and data science teams in our innovation campuses. So digital is now part of all the new. It's also at the heart of all the efficiency initiatives as it allows more efficient processes, a better customer and user experience, and a greater efficiency to enhance operational excellence with a lot of things expected in the next few years.
All right. Wow. So it goes back a really long time then.
It does. Quite a journey.
Yeah. So Thanos, can you explain the structure and the foundation that you guys use for all these different efforts? I know we've talked in the past about kind of technology and people and the infrastructure that you have. So can you go a little bit more in depth for us?
Yes, with a lot of pleasure. So digitization is something that you need to believe in order to succeed. And in our case, we do. That's the first thing. What we first learned is that we need an internal and external ecosystem, as we call it, to make it happen. It's a word we use quite a lot those days, but it's true. So to start with, staying close to our business is a cornerstone. As we mentioned, both also Serban and myself were R&D, but we have also a long-term operational background both. So it's also a sign, right? So we need the businesses to be integrated into the whole process of digitization from the beginning, in the very beginning, until the final implementation and scale up of the solutions. So then it's interesting to have a three-dimensional, a 3D approach, as we call it. The first is to have the adequate skills, the people. Technical skills are essential, of course. R&D usually focuses on data science in our case. In Air Liquide, R&D has currently the biggest team of data scientists. However, some other skills are a must, such as IT architecture and programming, such as data engineering, design, which are skills that mainly lie within the digital and IT department. But soft skills are also essential. This is something that we learned. Training, how do you train? Communication, how you communicate the solution to the business people, extremely important. And the competencies level, we're doing a lot of efforts. While the hiring of data scientists, data and software engineers, et cetera, started some years ago and it continues, it is clearly not enough. We need the whole organization to move towards a more digital, especially more data and AI culture. It's a matter of culture. Thus, for instance, in 2019, we organized a data summit where some 100 people participated, getting insights from other industrial people, well-known academics, etc., but also receiving training. In 2020, this was in 2019, right? In 2020, our data summit was followed by almost 2,000 people internally from Air Liquide. And it was made in a digital format. And there are other trainings, such as what we call the Tech for Execs, that focuses more on top managers, for instance. We call all this upskilling, and we're working on it more and more as an essential lever to promote the data and AI culture in the company. So we just talked about the first pillar or the first dimension, which is skills and people. The second one is strategy and governance. So the evolution of the organization is important. The digital and IT department defined functions as data owners, data officers, central data governance bodies, such as the group data board that manages the whole governance within the group, within the organization. We need all this because if we don't have good data, we cannot have we cannot talk about artificial intelligence, machine learning, etc. And the third pillar is, of course, the infrastructure. Data needs to be stored and struck in a structured and harmonized manner in the cloud and accessed easily to make it available to the data scientists to work on. So for data strategy, governance, and infrastructure, it is the digital and IT department is responsible within our early kit, but has to work hand in hand with operations and R&D. As we said, it's an ecosystem that you need to create and maintain. So this is the internal ecosystem. And on the other hand, we need to make sure that it works well, because for instance, for us, for R&D, if we don't have it, we could easily get stuck in performing proofs of concept. And this happens in a lot of companies. People get stuck in the first level, the proofs of concept, but then you cannot put into industrial practice and scale up. That's the story now. It's how we scale up. That's the story. Also, we have the external ecosystem. So we need to foster collaborations with industrial partners and top universities and institutions in Europe. I'll mention some. We work with Centrale Supélec, MinParisTech, Systemix, Fraunhofer in Europe, very well-known institutions. And in the US, through universities such as Carnegie Mellon, Wharton, and so forth. And also, we have also collaborations with small, innovative companies. So this external ecosystem is another condition for success. If I can give you a very concrete example, we recently co-constructed a big collaborative program to work on the trustful AI topic, a topic that is really, let's say, major today. So we have 10 major manufacturing companies around the research institute that's called Systemix in France, and some very well academic people working together to tackle this big issue. We want to ask her some essential questions: how to better select your data sets and reduce the bias? And once your AI system is running, how to make sure it gives results in any situation it is used that you can rely on and trust? We want to progress up to the point where we can validate and even certify AI system, artificial intelligence systems. This is what.
That's excellent. So, I've got a small follow-on question. You know, you've got so many different components, you know, between the US and Europe and North Africa. And how are you making them all talk to each other and work together? That's such a huge task that I know a lot of our members are facing, but I imagine it's magnified for you guys given the fact that you've got to keep all of your operations relatively close to your customers.
You want to take that, Thanos?
Otherwise, sorry, I threw a curveball in there.
that's not at all a problem. I think it's part of it is governance, as Thanos mentioned, and that the governance is basically defined, I would say, worldwide. I mean, it's applicable for the different hubs and clusters and countries. And then it's also a matter of having the right tools and infrastructure. I mentioned also that we harmonized and we standardized a certain number of processes, and that was also a way to make sure that the processes in different zones and countries are aligned. And then we also deployed a certain number of digital tools, like the Google Suite tools that basically allow us to work on a cloud. So it's cloud-based. We share documents, and so it's not uncommon. In fact, the most usual way is for people to work collaborative on projects from different parts of the world, having access at the different resources, which are cloud-based. And also we have a lot of communities sought or sort of specialized communities, I think we have hundreds of them, in which experts or people with the same center of interest can exchange, can ask questions, can provide solution to one another. So once again, it's a small world, but if you build the right tools, you can bring people together. And some of these digital tools are able basically to break the physical silos of the geography or of business types. I don't know if I answered rightly your question, but
it's definitely something that that came through as being a huge challenge for what Thanos was saying. I was curious how you were tackling it. So, you know, Serban, how have your recent research projects been impacted by all the digitalization efforts that you've been making, particularly in, you know, the last 5 years? You mentioned you've really kicked it into high gear.
Absolutely, yes, Lee. So in fact, the last 5 years, it's been one of the three major growth strategies of the group. And many of our researchers, when we talk about digital research projects, have been focused on different ways in which value can be created from the data that is accessible to us. So we have a lot of data, and the challenge is, how can you extract value out of it? And there are different types of value that can be extracted. So our computer and science and data science team in the different campuses have specialized in different areas of expertise. Our team in Delaware, for example, is much more centered on customer value with a focus on the customer lifetime value, with all that implies in terms of things like cross-selling, price management, efficiency, customer service, and customer churn. And to achieve that, our researchers often collaborate with universities such as Carnegie Mellon or the Wharton School of Business. Other data science team in Paris or Shanghai, for example, have focused more on IoT, on logistics, or on artificial intelligence. So I can give an example of the way we've used a digital feature and an agile way of working in our advanced fabrication center in Delaware, where we have built a cloud-based cobotic solution for manual welding. It's called Botex. It's already being offered to the customers. And this solution was developed in only 12 months in Delaware as a collaboration between OEMs and a startup and with the support of the goal for that is to support manufacturing industry's lack of skilled welders. So you're basically transforming completely our offer and the value that you can create. So I can give more details later if there are questions on that. But I think the interesting thing is that this digital approach allowed us to change the business model, to extract new ways of to create new way of value for the customers, and to even change the business relationship and what we're bringing to the table for our customers. Digital is also used by our healthcare business line with a mix of process automation and machine learning based decision support tools. So as an example, during the COVID pandemic, our scientists in Delaware have developed models to predict the medical oxygen needs for the hospitals that we are supplying in the US to help production and logistics team anticipate the need and ensure continuity of supply. And last but not least, digital is being leveraged more and more by our industrial operation in efficiency, purchasing energy, and ensuring reliability in running the plants. A good example of that being the Smart and Innovative Operation Program, or SIO, which has been deployed by our large industry business line over the past 5 years.
Can you tell me a bit more about that? The Smart Innovative Operations Program.
yeah. Well, as I mentioned before, our large industries business line is operating well over 500 large ISUs, which are air separating units, and SMRs, which are steam methane reformers making hydrogen, serving many steel and chemical sites. And these assets generate in excess of 1 billion data points per day. So you can imagine a lot of data. And this data comes mostly from the thousands of sensors that are being used to run the plants, to monitor the equipment, to ensure product specification, and to provide data to our sales team for billing. So the plants, which are located all over the world, benefit from the strong experience of our technical teams. But we can't have experts in every single plant. Okay, so digital technologies allow us to leverage data and to use a centralized data-driven decision-making process. So what we did, in fact, was create several centers in France, Belgium, Dubai, Malaysia, China, US, and Brazil that manage the different streams of the SIO project. So these streams are SIO Predict, SIO Perform, SIO Optim, and SIO Drive. So SIO Predict basically monitors thousands of equipment in hundreds of sites in 43 countries. And this stream looks for weak signal deviation from normal behavior to allow for early warning and to alert the experts that it's time to react. So basically, we have a lot of compressor, a lot of rotating equipment. You don't want them to break. We don't necessarily have spare parts in every plant. We have them centralized. We don't want to have any catastrophic event. So we are basically monitoring the vibration, the sound, different signals. And we're able to basically predict that a failure may occur a few weeks, a few months down the road. And that gives enough time for the maintenance team to make sure that they are proactive. They fix the problem before it arises. Okay, so that's what Predict does. So the Predict maintenance tool is now applied to 212 production sites. We've rolled out 7,500 models. And we've identified about 600 preventive actions, which thus avoided to have any impact to the customer. So rather big numbers. SIO Perform leverages a unique platform for all the SIO centers. And the focus is to spot the best past performance of a plant using machine learning and detect and show the parameters that allowed for this performance. So thus, we are able to act on the process parameter for optimal performance if there is a deviation, okay? SIO Optim creates a digital twin for each plant and uses model to simulate changes and help decision making. So because of that, instead of just doing the changes in the parameters of a plant, you can simulate some of these in the digital twin. And then if you're happy with the result, you can then do it in your real life and hopefully get what the prediction was, okay? And lastly, SIO Drive concerns the automation of some of the plant processes. And as an example, when moving from an operating point A to an operating point B, SIO drives allow different processes to become automated and optimized for best performance. So we can deliver the best results. So I would say I'm not going to get into details on all these streams, but you can imagine that this has been a five-year effort, that it's well engaged, but it's far from being finished. In SIO streams, when a deviation is detected and corrected, and we call this a catch, we are also, the savings are estimated and the catch is sorely reported. So we do that because this allows the organization to know what are the benefits of deploying such a program, and so to be able to give an idea of the return on investment that is being generated. And what's also interesting, I think, for the listeners is that in order to make all this work, we had to make the organization evolve. We had to create new roles and responsibilities. We had to create new career paths. We had to identify new competencies and implement new way of working. So it's a rather complex transformation, and it touches a lot of things.
Yeah, definitely. That's huge. And especially that bit about the ROI, how you're able to calculate that. I know a lot of our members are really struggling to demonstrate the value of the changes that they're implementing. So I imagine we'll be getting some questions on that. So, you know, something that you touched on in the beginning, about the pandemic. Thanos, can you tell us a bit about how you've leveraged digital to cope with the effects of the pandemic, you know, both within, you know, the organization and also for your customers, which you guys are supplying something very essential.
Yes, of course. So we operate in countries where crisis events can happen all the time. These events might be severe weather, earthquakes, tsunami, hurricanes, for instance, in Houston, etc., have a lot of assets. And we work with customers and hospitals that need to be able to rely on our continuity of supply. So Eliquid's industrial organization has been designed to show an important resilience. So by design, we're resilient as a company. So years before the pandemic of COVID, for instance, our digital and IT department had already built the necessary infrastructure, namely cloud technologies, in order for our employees to be able to work from a distance and in a secure manner. Thus, when the crisis arrived and many of the employees needed to work from home, the thing went quite seamlessly, and only some marginal effort was needed to get there. Further on, our capacity to use machine learning and AI technologies helped us to be more efficient with respect to the hospitals, our clients, and of course, in the end of the day, for the patients that are in the hospitals. Our R&D teams were able to support our European healthcare departments by producing better consumption predictions in order to anticipate the hospital needs in oxygen on a daily basis, and thus being able to better manage the production capacities in our plants. So we leverage the live open hospitalization data flows available by governments in most of the impacted European countries, like I name France, Spain, Italy, for instance. This data was provided at a very local scope and then combined with early kid data, liquid and gaseous oxygen deliveries, to track the epidemic spread region by region and production unit by production units where we had the adequate data. So we produced an AI-based predictive model for COVID-19 specific liquid oxygen consumption in the European regions and of the production units level. Our digital IT department helped to make the tool more easily accessible. Please remember, we talked about an ecosystem, so we needed those guys to help us with that. For instance, to have all the adequate visualizations in an operational mode. And as I mentioned earlier, again, and I mentioned it again, it's important to have this structure, this collaboration, this ecosystem to work together. And also, as our friend Serban mentioned just before, a similar tool was developed by R&D teams for the Americas healthcare operations based on data that were a little bit different. So again, it depends on the countries, as we said. And this shows, I believe, that artificial intelligence, machine learning can be, if you have this official data, of course, as we said, used to the benefit of clients, of patients, and society more general in case of a crisis. I hope this answers at least partially.
It does. That's huge to be able to supply that, especially given the speed with which all of it happened. I think that was the shocking nature of all of it. So, you know, we touched on this a little bit already, and Servan covered, you know, kind of the collaboration across the globe. But then how have you been able to handle the varying digital landscape of all of the different, you know, global components of the organization? You know, because, you know, in some areas that you're going into, you know, simply the infrastructure isn't there to be able to provide, you know, broadband access and things like that. So how have you been able to overcome that huge challenge?
Yeah, sorry. I'm not going to say it was or it is an easy task or an easy matter to deal with, right? As we mentioned, we're present in almost 80 countries today. And in many cases, our group made acquisitions. One of the largest and more recent ones being the one of Airgas, the Airgas company in the US. We understand that this means integration of many different IT system from an IT system, from an IT perspective, but also we have to deal with cultural and also regulatory, legal perspective. Some of the elements to show and some typical cases. In terms of data platforms, or data lakes, if you want to call it, sometimes we prefer platforms than lakes, because the lake you just swimming inside the platform is better. So the digital IT department decided to deploy those platforms by zone, by Europe, Americas, Asia, etc. This allows to manage some regulatory issues. From as we know, there are a lot of regulations already and coming more and more about data, but also to handle some of the IT infrastructure issues that might have some local impact. So we can transfer data before among those data platforms, but this is not automatic. You need specific authorizations and go through the IT guys. And the point we can make here is, as Urban mentioned, and I really made, I think, a very good overview of the smart and innovative operations. We deployed a worldwide strategy. We had we designed a worldwide strategy where when we're deciding, for instance, about which tool to use. We'll take an example, the predictive maintenance tool. To make the anomaly detection were chosen globally. And this is a tool deployed then in all the SIO Smart Innovative Operations Centers of Air Liquide. So we have only one tool. Nonetheless, the models using that tools are developed locally by the teams that work in each one of the centers. These teams can also ask for support to the global organization. But at the end of the day, they are the owners of the final models because they use them in their everyday life. And they use them to make operational decisions. So there is a global responsibility what to use. So we make benchmarks, R&D operations, the business lines to choose the good tool for us and then to deploy it much more locally with the help of the global teams. So we try to combine a global vision, a global strategy with local implementation and operational impact as well.
Do you get a lot of resistance from the local teams? Are they okay taking on the you know, the decision from the centralized organization?
Saying that everything is completely seamless would not correspond to reality. I mean, in a 65,000 people company, we can understand that nothing goes just clapping hands and have it done. Nonetheless, I believe that the thing here is that when the key is to take a good decision, I believe. So if the tool first of all is good, and if the communication that goes around it is good, then the people, I believe, that follow. And we should not forget that the SIO, the famous SIO program, had a very strong HR dimension. So since the beginning, the HR were involved in the program, in the project. So we needed to follow with the local people to explain. Let's say the global organization didn't go there and say, guys, this is it. You don't talk and you just execute. It was not like that. So there was a lot accompanying the local teams, explaining a lot of interaction of HR, creating new career paths, because this SIO, a new SIO organization for the large industries, created, of course, jobs to be transformed. So this has to be explained, accompanied, and show that the organization has to make benefit of that. I don't know, Sirban, if you have any other feedback to.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. I think our teams are deeply committed to the customer, and they want to be efficient, and they want to be safe, and they want to be reliable. So that's our DNA. So when you bring a tool and that tool helps their life or brings a service to the customer or improves the reliability or makes things easier by creating value all over the supply chain, of course, there's a learning period, but there's no rejection. I mean, they understand that we are doing that just to become a better company, to serve better our customers, and to help them in their tasks. So there may be at the beginning be some lack of understanding of what the tool is doing. But once we describe it, once we show it, once we train people, once they get used to it, then they wouldn't want to change.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, training is essential. And actually, so I'm going to forego my last question because we've already got questions coming in from the audience and I want to make sure we can get to those. And it's about training. So Bob Wilkinson is asking if you can provide more details on the Tech for Execs upskilling training.
So that's for you, Thanos.
Okay. The Tech for Execs. Yes, the Tech for Execs is a program, I would say, that gives a very very good overview to high level managers about what we a different set of things. And again, as I said, it is mainly about the three pillars that I mentioned. So we'll talk about what is the evolution of infrastructures, how a data platform works, where it is deployed, what it does, who does it, who is participating, how you can use it, and so forth, for instance. And then, of course, we give some also a high level, I would say, I wouldn't say theoretical background, but some support to understand how AI works, what it is, demystify something. I mean, demystifying that is, what is machine learning? Is it something magical? Where it works, where it doesn't work? So we give a lot also of use cases in short, and this we found is important, in short, I would say, presentations, not very long ones, some short and on the spot presentations, and people come from the operations and say, guys, this is what we've done in Canada, in Brazil, in the US, in Europe, etc. My business, this is the result that they gave. This is where you stand. These are the problems that we have, we're facing, next steps, etc. So managers, I think, get a quite good idea of some, again, not very theoretical background, but about pillars, some basis of artificial intelligence and machine learning use cases. And then the governance and the infrastructure, how it goes. some way.
Yeah, I think that's so important, your point about demystifying the topic, because there's so much, you know, ooh, AI, and a lot of people don't know what that encompasses. And, you know, it just seems to be one of those things that can be fitted to so many different parts of the organization. But to have those tools and say, oh, yeah, that's something that that we can actually use, and I do understand it. That's really important. That's an interesting program you guys got going on there. So another question that we've had come in is, how is digital transformation helping to accelerate your blue hydrogen efforts? I don't know which one of you wants to cover that.
Well, sure. So just for everyone to understand, we as a company are quite committed to contribute to the energy transition, climate change, and the sustainability of our business. And we've been quite engaged for, I would say, decades into promoting different solutions, one of those being the use of hydrogen as a vector of energy. And the challenge is how are you going to produce this hydrogen in a way that doesn't add carbon, CO2 to the atmosphere. So I would say we have green hydrogen, blue hydrogen. So one is using renewable resources like I would say wind energy, solar energy, renewable biogas. The other is more about making hydrogen through traditional, I would say, chemical approach, but capturing and sequestering underground CO2, so it doesn't go to the atmosphere. So you have different kind of flavors and colors for hydrogen, green, blue, gray. So we are still at an early stages for that journey. So what I can say is that there is a lot of data which will be used. Just to give an example, this hydrogen is used as a vector of energy. So one of the important elements that you need to consider is that while wind and solar energy produce power is not always needed at the moment where it's produced. Same thing with nuclear. Sometimes at night there's a lot of production which is not being used, and there's an opportunity for hydrogen which can be produced at any moment, which can be stored, which can be transported worldwide in its liquid or gas form to become a vector, storing this energy, transporting it, and using it at the right moment. So that means that you need to look at your operation. So for example, if you need to operate dozens of electrolyzers, how is the best way to operate them? Will you use half of them at 100%? Will you use all of them at 50%? Will you how are you going to cope with wind and energy? How is the grid going to adapt to that? How are you going to optimize and play with your installation to be able to be energy efficient and improve? So I would say it's not yet done, but for example, we use the data science. We are now finalizing a large unit in Nevada to produce hydrogen to supply for a mobility market in California. And when we needed to build our fleet of trailers, we had different sizes of the trailers, different types of trailers. You could organize your supply chain in different ways. So we used also data science to try to optimize and try to find which is the best way, which is at the same time efficient and reliable. So there are many ways in which you can use data and digital for this organization. And down the road, there are going to be ways in which the hydrogen is going to be used, probably new business models and new offers which are going to be made to customers. and which will rely on a lot of digital digital type transaction and digital data.
That's excellent. And the questioner, Tim Swales, he says, thanks. That's a great one. We'll have to keep an eye on that and bring you back as things move on. Definitely, as we talk about sustainability, that's becoming a huge effort, issue and challenge that a lot of our members are taking on. So we're really pleased to see that. And we'll be doing more programming on that in the future, I think. So excellent. Well, I think we'll go ahead and wrap up there. So I want to say a huge thank you to Serban and Thanos for joining me today and for answering my questions and the audience's questions. We really appreciate you taking the time to tell us about all your efforts and all the stuff you've been going through. So thank you so much. And great.
Our pleasure.
Thank you. And just as a reminder to everyone, you'll be getting a copy of the recording of this, and you're welcome to share it with your teams, and please do. And please remember to tune in June for our next Thought Leader interview, and I'll send you information on that shortly. So thank you, everyone. And again, thank you so much, Serban and Thanos.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you, too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.